The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It's Wednesday, April 8th. Woke up this morning to a picture my wife was sending me of my dog in my child's shoes. My son had decided this morning that he was going to put shoes on the dog. That's how deeply quarantined we are. So we're trying to keep bringing content to you. We're going to do that by running through the top 10 running back prospects in this draft. But little piece of bonus content this Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, the Super Friends are going to do a live chat podcast. It is going to be on Podbean, and we're going to do it live, is what the promo says, with everybody connecting on Zoom and everything else, everybody being kind of stuck in their houses. We want to connect with you guys and chat up our listeners. So again, Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be on the Podbean app. We're going to do a live podcast there. Go to the app store in your phone, search for Podbean. It's a free app to download, or you can go to podbean.com, I believe. And on Thursday at 8 p.m., we're going to do a live mailbag show. You can interact with me, Ryan Wilson, and Sean Wagner McGuff. John Breach, still off on personal matters. Things can get weird. Thursday at 8. I don't know if you're allowed to drink. Well, you know what? I'm allowed to drink when I work because my boss told me when he told me to do this daily podcast to start, you know, just start drinking when you do your podcast. So, I'll be drinking. You guys get your favorite cocktail, favorite beer, maybe ice water, iced tea, whatever you're on, you know, quarantine diet, and swing by Podbean Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Joining me today to break down his top 10 running backs, Josh Edwards, CBS Sports NFL draft analyst. Josh, what's up, buddy?
Not too much. Everybody's healthy, so that's pretty much all we can ask for these days. But I started the joke on a previous podcast that I've seen you and Ryan more than I've seen my own immediate family. Yeah. It's now a reality. I've seen you guys more than I've seen like my parents, everything since we started this. So it's been wild.
I have seen my parents. I've seen you more times in the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks than I have my parents. Because I think I face it. Well, in fact, like yesterday I was doing a podcast at 3 o'clock and my wife FaceTimed with my mom, which is really nice for, you know, to go out of her way and like FaceTime with a mother-in-law. Like that's, I really appreciated that. And my mom read a Bernstein Bears book to my son, FaceTime or whatever it was. So yeah, I'm trying to do their part, but yeah, man, when you're creating the content, it gets a little, I've definitely spent more time with Ryan and Sean and Breach over the last 4 weeks than I have my parents over the last like 3 months, which is kind of depressing. But you know what? We got to build for the draft. So let's dive into it. By the way, coming up later this week, we will do top wide receiver. This is offensive prospect rankings week on the old Pick Six podcast. Top wide receivers will be tomorrow with Ryan Wilson, and then tight end offensive line with Pete Prisco, who by the way played a little. Actually, you know what? I don't need to talk about the prank I played on Pete. We'll talk about it later. Let's get to your running backs, Josh. Where they might go, who might be a good fit, who they resemble, and how they could play out depending on where they land. Okay, I got to be honest. I don't know all of these guys. It's a fairly deep running back class, I feel like, but it might be a little top heavy. Is that fair?
I think it's a pretty deep class. I think once you start getting to probably the seventh running back in this class, I think is where you kind of start seeing a little bit of a dip.
Yep.
In which case it kind of becomes interchangeable at that point. So there's a lot of, you know, different kind of talents that are available in this class. So I think a lot of teams are going to be happy with what they walk away with.
All right, that's sort of similar to the quarterback class too. I think like you got the top group of guys and then you can really interchange how you want. Whereas I think the wide receiver class, it's a lot of personal preference and there's, but there, you know, 10 to 12 dudes that could fill out that top 10. Is it LaMichael Perrine?
LaMichael Perrine.
LaMichael. Yeah. Oh, LaMichael. That makes more sense. LaMichael Perrine. Is that Samaje Perrine's brother?
You know what? I knew that at some point. I think they're actually cousins, if I remember correctly.
Have to be related. You're right. They are cousins. All right. They are cousins.
Yeah, we'll get to him. He's a pretty good player in his own right.
Well, what do you, Samaje?
No, LaMichael.
Oh, we already were starting on LaMichael.
Oh, that's your quote. Oh, okay. So we're working back.
Yeah. Okay. I'm saying like he's number 10. Like, let's dive into, the LaMichael Perrine from Florida. He's a little bit older, actually 22 years old, which is means that, you know, I mean, I think not like it's a big deal. You're going to use him for 5 years and then dump him anyway. But, what do you like about this kid and, how did he end up making your top 10 list?
Yeah. You know what? He wasn't in my top 10 initially, but the more I got to watching him, he's just a really well-rounded player. Effective pass catcher. He's tough, good in pass protection. So you don't have to worry about taking him off the field on certain downs. He doesn't possess that elite speed. So I think that's one area where, you know, you kind of have to base what your offense is trying to do around that. I had him going at number 165 overall, which I think is the fifth or sixth round, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was taken a little bit earlier, if I had to be honest.
Okay. So we're looking at a guy, you know, day three running back pick who, depending on the landing spot, could end up maybe seeing some time next year, but probably just in spot duty, right?
Exactly. Yeah. He's, like I said, you're going to get a lot of good value even into day three. So in this particular scenario, I had him going to the Jaguars. So, you know, he would not be asked to start. As a rookie, he would be more of a complimentary piece to Leonard Fournette, and then we kind of see what happens with him next offseason, and it potentially works into a starter's role. But I don't think you're going to have to ask him to take that on immediately.
Okay. Number nine, Darrington Evans out of Appalachian State. What's up, App? Love App State. This guy is a different style runner than Perrine. And by the way, Perrine, when you talk about him like that, it's like, does a lot of stuff well, but not really explosive. That reminds me of Samaje Perrine, even though he set the record for most rushing yards in a game, I think, with Oklahoma. Like, he's just not, you look at him, he's a plotter. Like, he's just not that, you know, not that thrilling. Evans is a little more explosive, right? But a smaller running back.
He's, I would say explosion's probably on the lesser end of what he's best at, along with pass protection. When I look at him, he's a patient, springy running back. He's got good vision, great contact balance, which is something that I think you'll find is pretty common with this running back class throughout. I think it was either me or Chris actually put a comparison of Bilal Powell on top of him. I had him going number 119 overall to the Falcons in my most recent mock draft, and then I had the Carolina Panthers and the Chargers as some other potential fits. But once you're kind of in those day three kind of situations, you start looking for those value players, guys that could possibly step in and start one day. So you're not so much worried about the scheme fits at that point as much as you are just trying to get some quality players in your building.
Yeah, and I think good, like you said, good pass catcher. Also, he never fumbled in college. 482 carries, no fumbles. That should go some way. I mean, like, that's got to go to something if you're an NFL team and you're looking for a guy who can impact, especially as like a third down back, special teams guy who maybe gets picked in the third, what do you think, third, fourth, fifth round, third, fourth round?
So I think the early fourth round is probably his sweet spot, probably somewhere in the fourth round. I could see him slipping into maybe the third round, but I think it's more likely you're looking at that fourth round kind of range.
Okay. All right. At number eight for you, we had Joshua Kelly out of UCLA. Tell me about this young man.
Yeah, again, not elite top end speed. Athleticism explosion is not really what you're looking at when you get Joshua Kelly, but he's a guy that does everything else really well. We didn't see a lot of pass production from him, but in the opportunities that he was given to catch passes, I was pretty pleased with what he showed in that regard. He's a physical runner, smooth, balanced. Again, good contact balance. I had him going number 94 overall to the Packers in my 7-round mock draft. And then I had the Bengals and the 49ers as potential fits as well. But we do these draft profiles between Ryan, Chris, and I over the course of the offseason. And I don't know if it was Chris or I at this point that did the comparison for Josh Kelly. But somebody wrote in Rex Burkhead. So you kind of get an idea of what he brings to the table just by that comparison alone.
Okay. So obviously a pass catcher, but like kind of a, like a.
Yeah, he's not going to blow you away with his speed, his athleticism, but he's a real solid player. He's going to do pretty much everything at a very adequate level. A guy that you can trust having on the field. If you have an injury or two, you're not too worried about him seeing some action.
All right. I keep opening up our, by the way, we have a Pick Six podcast show. I keep opening up the wrong rundown. Because they both have Pick Six at the top of them. Pick Six podcast show on CBS Sports HQ every single weekday, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern. You can go to CBS Sports app on your Roku, Amazon Fire, Xbox, Roku. Did I mention that? CBS Sports app on your telephone. Wherever it is, you can check out our show, 4 to 5 Eastern. John Breach currently out. Bryant McFadden in. He actually dunked on Sean on a Bears-related situation. And I think that we'll probably have another mock draft show from 12 to 2 Eastern next Monday, although TBD based on, corona situations and how things happen there. At number 7, is this Anthony McFarland Jr.? Is that
it kid? Is. Yeah.
No, it's Booger, yeah. baby Booger.
Well, I actually don't know that either. That's that would make sense. It's worth looking at. I can't imagine they are just by their body structures as well, but I would have to look into that. That's kind of that's weird.
Like,
I'll have to look into
like
that.
Booker would have talked about that.
Yeah, so I'm thinking it's not very likely. He's from the state of Maryland as well, so the ties just don't really fit. I can't imagine
that. He is not the son of former NFL defensive lineman and they share the same name, and he is a junior. He is not the son. So we do have an Antoine Winfield. It would fit the timeline, though. Like, if Booger had a kid, right?
Yeah, I was just surprised. You know, I would have heard something about that if that were the case. But then I started thinking, like, you know what? That's pretty – it wouldn't be a surprise given everything that we've seen with Antoine Winfield and some of these other guys that have sons coming out this year as well. Thaddeus Moss. I'm Randy Moss's son, so it's that time. I mean, it's very possible, but in this case, it's actually just a pure coincidence.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, that's they have now. I don't want to dig into like Booger McFarland's kids or anything, but I kind of want to know if his kids are named like. Does he have a kid named Anthony McFarland Jr.? Because if I'm Anthony McFarland Jr., like not Booger's son, I am absolutely like acting like I'm Booger's son.
Yeah, like, I mean, it doesn't hurt to get a little extra publicity.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, Anthony McFarland Jr. Hold on. This is confusing. Okay, so Booger McFarland is not Anthony. Okay, all right. This is wild. There's like a note in Wikipedia about it. Like, do not be confused with Booger McFarland. In fact, on Anthony McFarland's Wikipedia. So there you go. So it's not just me. Tell me about Anthony McFarland and what to like out of this young man out of Maryland.
Yeah, so this is kind of the antithesis of some of the guys that we talked about before this, because he is explosive. I mean, this guy has top-end elite speed that you look at from the position. Lateral quickness is solid. It gets to be a little dicey, but he runs a little bit too high, so you're not really counting on him on short yardage runs. Pass protection has to improve. And his pass catch production was pretty limited as well. They didn't ask him to do a whole lot of that in their offense. But it's something that he's going to have to become more comfortable with in today's NFL. I had him going number 153 overall to the Dolphins. He was the second running back that I had the Dolphins taking. That's a big need for them in this class, and there's a lot of options available. But I also had the Titans, the Bills, as a couple of other options. A guy that's going to be able to provide some explosion out of the backfield. Somebody, again, we've got him compared to Jerick McKinnon, so you get a little bit of an idea of what he's able to bring to the table, even though we haven't really seen Jerick McKinnon much in recent years. But he's that kind of a player. He's very fast. He's explosive. You kind of know what you're going to get in the open space. If he sees open field, he's going to take it, and he's going to take it very quickly. So you got to be able to react if you're an NFL defense.
Ran a 4.44 at the 40 at the NFL Combine. So certainly he's flashed some speed, but not insanely productive at Maryland either, right? Like, he just didn't have the numbers that you would, which is not necessarily always a bad thing, right? Like, all right, let me ask you this. If you're looking at a running back prospect, I mean, obviously you want to have productions because you get to see more tape on them. But if you're an NFL team and for like evaluating a prospect, like, it's not the worst thing in the world not to have, you know, 1,200 carries coming out of college, right?
No question, because, and we'll talk about this with a few guys here shortly, but once you start seeing that level of carries, almost 200 carries a year over the course of a player's collegiate career, you start getting a little concerned about that, because you're kind of hoping some of that tire tread is still there when they do get to the NFL. We're seeing a trend in the NFL where you get great value out of rookie running backs, and you get value into their second, their third years. But when you start having to invest $10+ million into the running back position on their second contracts, it hasn't really worked out that well. So you would rather have a guy that maybe has a little limited production at the collegiate level, but you see some of the ability that's going to translate to this level. So in the case of Anthony McFarland Jr., they had another draft eligible running back in this class as well. His name is Javon Leak, who's a really good player as well, should also get drafted. But those two were able to share the load a little bit for the Terrapins this past season, which I think ultimately is going to benefit them both in the long run as you kind of look at their earnings potential.
Shout out Greensboro, North Carolina, Javon Leak, Page High School. Although I see that NFL.com's breakdown, their player bio, has Page spelled wrong. So go fix that, NFL. P-A-I-G-E, Page High School. I'm big on promoting North Carolina. People don't care. Anyway, moving along. So Zach Moss, you're number 6 running back in this class out of Utah. A powerful runner, right?
Compact. Yeah, he is. He's really fun to watch. He's coming off an injury this year, which is one of the weaknesses that I've gotten written down. He's not the most elusive. Doesn't possess the top end speed that you would look at from some of these other options, but fantastic contact balance. I mean, it doesn't get any better than him in this class. Powerful runner, great hands. He's springy, so he gets in and out of gaps pretty quickly. Really talented runner. We've got a comparison of Gus Edwards to Zach Moss. I had him going number 93 overall to the Titans.
We're talking about a top 100 runner here, right? Or top 100 pick, sorry.
Exactly, yeah. So he's a top 100 kind of player. Every player beyond this point is someone that I think you value as a top 100 player. And Zach Moss is just a really gifted player. I think he would be even higher if it hadn't been for his injury. But I think his upside is about as good as anybody in this class.
Okay. Wow, that's interesting. The Utah team is really good, too. Cousins was Santana and Sonoris Moss.
Yeah.
Interesting.
See, that one I do know. You could have asked me that one. I would have actually known that. So.
I saw the U mentioned, and I was like, wait, what? Oh, yeah, he went to – so that's – isn't that crazy? Like, these guys were, like ballers at the U and, like, peak Miami, like, prime. And then, like, Zach Moss goes to Utah.
Exactly. I think he was actually committed to the Hurricanes at one point in the process. I think they were led in separate directions before he ever was to sign anything. But he actually had the same opportunity at one point to follow in their footsteps.
So any of these guys have, you know, that we've gone through that, you know, the top. So this is sort of where the drop off is for you, right? After Zach Moss, maybe?
So I think Zach Moss is on the fringe just because of his injury. But yeah, this is kind of where we start seeing a little bit of a discrepancy between the top half of this list and the bottom half of this list. But just to show, I mean, the kind of depth that's available in this class, We didn't even talk about Keyshawn Vaughn from Vanderbilt, Eno Benjamin from Arizona State.
Yeah, Benjamin did. I like Eno Benjamin.
I know you love Eno Benjamin, and obviously that's Pete's alma mater as well. So I couldn't fit him onto the list, and we know that he's a really good player. So that kind of gives you an idea of just how good this class can be.
All right. So with like Zach Moss, do you see a scheme fit at all for him, or I think that matters too. Like you look at these running backs and I think like a guy like Kyle Shanahan wants to find a guy who's a one cut runner who he knows can plant and go for his system. He doesn't want to just bring in any old guy to his system. Do you see any, particular, schematic fit or a team fit that Zach Moss would work with?
Yeah, again, I gave him to the Titans. I also have the Lions and the Redskins as possibilities. Washington obviously has Adrian Peterson. They've got Darius Geis, who has struggled with some injuries. Detroit has Kerryon Johnson, but he's had his own injury issues. San Francisco is an easy one. I don't think I even gave them a running back, but they're pretty deep there. But at the same time, I could see them moving on from a couple of guys and bringing them into this class. So. Okay. Zach Moss would be an interesting name for them as well, but Tennessee, I think, is a good fit because he's a guy that can go in there and back up Derrick Henry in the event that they, don't get something locked down long term.
Okay. Zach Moss is number six. Excuse me, not number seven. Number five, J.K. Dobbins. All right, now we're into the Will knows who all these guys are range of prospects. I know who Zach Moss is because I watched a significant – look, if you're going to gamble on football, you're probably going to be watching some later football games, and Utah played later football games. But J.K. Dobbins, obviously a name that everybody knows, huge opening run against Clemson for Ohio State. I'm a little surprised you have him down at five, to be perfectly honest. Is that lower than most people?
I would say it's probably a little lower than most people. I think when you get to this range of running backs, there's very little that differentiates themselves. So I could see him being the second running back taken. I could also see him being the fifth running back taken. I'm not sure there's much of a gap. So for me, it says number five next to his name, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was the second running back off the board.
Okay. I think people see, like, do you think he is an explosive runner? Is he a grinder? Where does he fit in terms of what he's asked to do? Because it's easy to look at a team that's on look at a player who's on a team like Ohio State, right? And to say like, this guy is this guy hits home runs all the time. Well, it's like Clemson, right? Like you're going to get home runs because you play for a team with so many weapons that puts up so many points.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got great lateral quickness, again, contact balance, pass catching is a strength of his. Ohio State ran a lot of stretch plays, so that's where you're seeing some of those zone concepts coming into play there. So he would be a good fit for a zone kind of scheme because he already has that familiarity. He's got to improve as a pass protector. This is one of the guys that we're talking about in terms of their carry load because he has had a lot of carries over the course of his career. This is a guy who's one of the best Ohio State running backs of all time. I mean, when you look at his production, I think he's number two on their list all time. He may have even eclipsed number one. I don't remember if he got there or not, but he's up there in terms of the great.
No way, he passed Eddie George. Oh, he did. He did pass Eddie George. He passed Zeke Elliott and Eddie George. Did not, however, pass Archie Griffin.
Yeah.
In fact, he's 130 yards behind Archie Griffin, which tells you a lot about Archie Griffin.
Yeah, exactly. If he had come back for a senior year, he very well would have eclipsed that in all likelihood, but not the most, I wouldn't say explosive traits is one of his strengths. He's got so much other stuff that he does well. I had him going to Baltimore at number 55 overall. I thought the Packers were a good fit for him as well. The Chiefs, there's some similarities in the way that they do things. He's very scheme versatile in what he can do, but because of his familiarity with a zone blocking scheme, I think that's kind of a sweet spot for him in this draft class.
Okay. One thing to look up for if you're ever mocking a running back to Baltimore, and I don't know the answer on J.K. Dobbins for this, and I can't look up Sports Info Solutions quick enough. But I mean, he had 2,003 rushing yards last year, 301 carries. Woo. Yeah, it's a big game too. But if you're looking up for Baltimore, check out how guys run out of shotgun. That's I've mentioned that like 9 billion times, but they always tend to focus on those guys. He had 193 rushing yards against Indiana, a buck 63 against good Lord. All right, so just for point of context, like Dobbins had 177. These are back-to-back games. 177 against Nebraska, 172 against Michigan State, 121 against Northwestern, 163 against Wisconsin in four straight games, never had more than 24 carries. And then down the stretch and into the playoffs, including the Big Ten title game, 157 against Penn State, 211 against Michigan, 172 against Wisconsin, and 174 against Clemson. That is a mauling stretch of games where he had multiple four-game stretches of 120 yards or more.
Whew. Yeah, he was insane. I mean, I was doing the running back rankings throughout the year, so I had this weekly article where I was tracking what these guys were doing. And Dobbins was putting up like video game type numbers. I mean, it was absurd every single week. In a Big Ten conference that primarily likes to stop the run or at least attempt to. So he's a really special player. We saw that kind of elevate even more so this year. He's one of those top 100 players easily.
So do you think he's somebody that a team would draft and expect him to start now, or is it? And that's a tough question, I understand, because you don't, it depends on where he goes, obviously. But like, let's say the Dolphins draft him with a second round pick. Is he the starter for the Dolphins next year?
Yeah, assuming they don't do anything else, I would safely assume that he's their starting running back. I would assume most teams
they have Jordan Howard, so maybe it's like a timeshare with Jordan Howard, but
I think he's better than Jordan Howard. So I would expect him to take over the starter's role there. I would expect pretty much any team that was going to take him in the first couple of rounds to probably have starter aspirations for him. But he doesn't need to. I mean, he's from an Ohio State team that has some very talented running backs. I mean, Master Teague is a guy that got a lot of carries for Ohio State last year as well. He's going to be Master Teague, yeah, that is not a made-up name. That is a legitimate prospect. I think he's from Tennessee.
Murfreesboro. Hell yeah, boy.
Yeah, well, so he's going to be a good one, too.
Twitter right now, just for the name. Master Teague. Unbelievable. Master Teague the third. What? Unbelievable. All right. I'm easily distracted. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Josh will break down the top four running backs, including a possible Wisconsin replacement for former Wisconsin star Melvin Gordon.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
So I teased something about Wisconsin. I love the idea, Josh, of the Los Angeles Chargers using a day two pick. I assume it probably have to be their first round pick. I think they only have one, whatever it is, 38 or whatever. On Jonathan Taylor, the running back out of Wisconsin. They used a first-round pick on Melvin Gordon, of course, a few years back. Do you think that's a decent fit? And what do you think about Jonathan Taylor, the prospect?
Yeah, I think it's a decent fit. I had him going number 67 overall to the Lions, which is one of those circumstances where I was like, I don't know how this happened, but just as you're working through a mock draft, that's the way it played out. So I think it would be interesting if he did land in Los Angeles, especially as you mentioned, replacing Melvin Gordon, a former Badger there as well. You look at what they've got on the depth chart, Austin Ekeler, Justin Jackson. Justin Jackson's going to be more of a physical runner. Austin Eckler's a guy that you can use in a versatile capacity, catching passes out of the backfield, that kind of stuff. Jonathan Taylor, he's had some fumble issues. He's going to have to clean that up if he wants to be on the field consistently. But this is a guy that has home run threat. I mean, he's a really special player when the ball is in his hand. He's patient. We saw him become a lot more patient in 2019. It was kind of reminiscent of Le'Veon Bell, actually, another former Big Ten standout. He improved as a pass catcher. He's got great top end speed, ran a 4.4 at the combine. I think it was almost a 4.3. Actually, I think is what he ran at the combine.
He ran 4.39 at the combine, so you're correct. 36 inch vertical jump. Wow. 123 broad, 701, three cone, 4.24, 20 yard shuttle. Those are pretty good numbers. The three cone's not great, but I guess that's whatever.
Is that not great? So that was one of the things that kind of stood out in film. He doesn't restart quickly. He's got great top end speed, but he doesn't restart quickly. That's one of the things that you kind of see. But this is the prime example of a guy that may have some durability questions because of how many carries that he's gotten over the course of his career in Madison. I mean, he has, from my understanding, not even missed like a practice or a game. So it hasn't been an issue for him in the past. But when you're looking at the sheer number of carries that he's had over the course of his career, there's going to be some NFL teams that dig into him a little bit deeper because they don't know how long he's going to be able to hold up at this level. So that's a guy that I think is interesting for the Chargers. I think he's interesting for the Lions. I think he's interesting for the Rams, the Steelers. I mean, there's a lot of teams that might be of interest in Jonathan Taylor. He's a really special player. In fact, we've got a James Conner comparison on Jonathan Taylor. I think Jonathan Taylor is probably a better running back, more explosive than James Conner, but at the same time, you get a little bit of a visual in terms of his body structure, what he's capable of doing as a running back out of the backfield.
Love it. Third all time in terms of 2 year rushing yard total, behind only Melvin Gordon and Troy Davis in terms of his rushing yards for the last 2 years. For those that want to know, that total is 4,197 yards in 2 years. That is a crap ton of yards, 37 rushing touchdowns. And I think it's worth noting, I don't even know where I say stuff anymore. I'm sure I've said it on this podcast, but if you look at his receiving totals, like, he didn't have huge numbers. I mean, 26 catches for 252 yards last year, which is not a ton, but Paul Chris made a point of working with him to get his pass catching better last year and to involve him more in the passing game. They just don't pass a lot because it's Wisconsin, but like 26 receptions and 5 receiving touchdowns is pretty good. 2,255 yards from scrimmage. It was very clear that they wanted to help him out to get to the next level. And so that's an added bonus. Did you get a guy who worked on his pass catching skills and tried to improve as he moved along?
Exactly. I think when you have a guy that's able to identify his weaknesses and be excited to improve them, I think you have to be excited about what his professional prospects look like. He's had at least 299 carries in each of the past 3 seasons.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah.
And again, like, it's great that he's durable. I think it's one of those things where, like Melvin Gordon, Jonathan Taylor should not expect to be this is an interesting comment, like, just topic of discussion. If you're Jonathan Taylor, you would much rather be a second round pick than a first round pick. I know there's a lot of honor and pride in being a first round pick and being the first running back taken. You would rather be the 33rd overall pick than the 32nd overall pick. Wait till the second day because you don't get the fifth year option. So you're going to get a franchise tag, worst case scenario, in your fifth year of playing in the NFL. And so that would be beneficial for you, which it sucks that the system's like that, but what are you going to do? Moving along to your number 3. Any teams? Who'd you have him mocked to, you said? The Lions?
Yeah, so I had him mocked to the Lions. You mentioned the Chargers, the Rams, the Steelers would be a couple more.
Okay. And not really scheme dependent, more like just feed.
No, I think he's got some versatility. He can operate out of a more power scheme. I think he can do some zone blocking stuff as well. So, once you kind of get into this range with the kind of ability that all of these guys have, I think you see the potential in all of them to be pretty much scheme, not scheme specific, to have some versatility in that. So Jonathan Taylor is kind of the start. Well, actually, J.K. Dobbins would be the start of that group, but Jonathan Taylor, a guy that, can probably excel in any situation that you place him in. But as you mentioned, when you're talking about the draft selection as well, it actually benefits him if you find that sweet spot, because if you don't have him start right away, if he's sharing carries, that's going to make his career longer as well. It makes him more likely to get that big second contract. So I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a lot of value in landing in the right situation.
Yeah. You know, another team that would be an interesting fit, and maybe I don't think you said, but like the Saints, I know that they don't really need a running back. They have Alvin Kamara, but like if you compare Alvin Kamara and Jonathan Taylor, to me, that's a nice little comp too. Like you could put two guys in the backfield again. You know, Taylor can catch the ball if necessary, but he can be the guy who pounds it down the other team's throat. And you don't have to feature Kamara like 24/7. Okay, moving on to your number three, Cam Akers out of Florida State. Tell us about Cam Akers and why you should love him. The next Dalvin Cook?
We do kind of have the next Dalvin Cook on this list, but it's not Cam Akers. Cam Akers is more of a Kenyon Drake kind of player.
I was kidding about the next Dalvin Cook, but I wish you'd given me that so I could tease it, before the break. Anyway, I'm just kidding. Go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah. So Kenyon Drake is a little bit more of what he reminds us of. He's got great change of direction, explosive player, three down back. So you can count on him being on the field for pass protection, pass catching. You know, he's a great runner as well. He's been slept on a little bit in this class because Florida State was just so bad this year. Their offensive line forced him to do a little bit more.
They've been bad for the last like 3 years. They've been terrible.
Exactly, but he was asked to do so much more even in this offense with the liabilities that they had at the quarterback position, the offensive line unit. I mean, they were deficient across the board there, and he was asked to do a lot pretty much by himself. So his production may not pop the way that some of these other guys do, like Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins. He does have some fumbling concerns as well, but this is a guy that has a lot of upside, and I think we could see his best football still ahead of him. I had him going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at number 45 overall. I had the Falcons, the Jets is a couple of other options as well, because it doesn't sound like the Jets are really comfortable paying Le'Veon Bell what he's getting paid. So I think they're trying to get out of that as quickly as possible. And then obviously Atlanta just gave a deal to Todd Gurley. But with what we know about Todd Gurley, how long can you rely on him to hold up as well? So I think those are three options that could potentially stand out there if you're looking for suitors on Cam Akers.
That's a great point about the Falcons. I don't think enough people talk about it. It's like, oh, the Falcons got Todd Gurley. They're fine. It's like, no, that's the opposite of fine. Like you have – I mean, is Todd Gurley definitely better than Devontae Freeman? I mean, maybe.
No, I mean, it could be a wash. Right. This is a guy that the Rams were willing to part for nothing, essentially, except some cap space. So, I mean, it kind of tells you how they envisioned him, and they were the ones that drafted him. So – I don't think you can assume that Todd Gurley is a long-term answer in Atlanta. Fantastic player when healthy, but that's been the biggest issue in recent years.
All right, number two on your list, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, LSU running back. Is he the next Dalvin Cook?
He's not the next Dalvin Cook, but we're down to two.
I was like, I don't really see him as the next Dalvin Cook, but okay. I agree with your comparison to the guy you're going to make it to, but tell me what you like about Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
So the player that Clyde Edwards-Helaire does remind us of is a little bit of Devin Singletary, the Bills running back who is a little bit smaller, but he's very explosive. He's great in pass protection. He's phenomenal catching passes out of the backfield. He's got great hands. He's got a very low center of gravity, and that's not a short joke. It's a fact that he like shrinks his strike zone while he's running the football. So he rarely takes a loss. This is a guy that you can kind of count on falling forward anytime he's contacted, but he's got great contact balance. I had him going number 39 overall to the Dolphins, which is probably a little rich for a lot of people, but I've come around to what he does playing that position. He's a guy that has overcome expectations set for him every step of the way. He was a late addition to LSU's recruiting class when he did sign. I mean, this is a guy that, despite all odds, all limitations, has just excelled every step of the way. So I said the Dolphins would be a good fit, but to me, I'm thinking this is the guy that you want alongside Tom Brady as well, because you know he's going to bring his lunch pail every single day, and he's going to force this defense to play every single practice rep like it's in the middle of the game.
By the way, here's an amazing stat. This is courtesy of Lance Zierlein of NFL.com. 36% of Clyde Edwards-Helaire's carries in 2019 were for either first downs or touchdowns. That is wild. I mean, that is a 36% of the time he touched the ball, either got a first down or a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, it's mind-boggling. They had a fantastic offensive line, but to take anything away from him would be absolutely misguided. He's a really special player. His work ethic is special. Everything about him suggests that he's going to have at least a solid career in the NFL. I mean, I feel pretty confident in putting that kind of a stamp on him.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, safe to say that do you think Allaire has a chance of going in the first round? I mean, obviously anybody does, I guess. But, I mean, it feels like if we might get one running back in the first round. And I think anything – I mean, look, the Seahawks could do what they did. Somebody could do what the Seahawks did with Rashad Penny and just shock the world. But I would be really surprised if we got more than one or even one in the first round at this point.
No, I agree with you 100%. That's actually one of the topics that Chris, Ryan, and I are going to discuss in a mailbag tomorrow on CBSSports.com. So I'll tease that a little bit. But I think you're absolutely right. If we get
an actual mailbag?
Yeah, I'm going to throw it over my shoulder, a little satchel.
Why don't you guys do it in podcast form? You can take over the mics and you guys can record it, and then I can have a day off.
I'm up for it. We'll hit up RJ. We'll hit up Debo. We'll get this settled out. But this is something we started doing last week, just kind of touching on some draft questions that are lingering in the minds of everybody. Like last week, we talked about possibly the Bengals trading out of number one and what it would cost for a team like the Dolphins to move up. So those are the kind of questions.
So sort of like RJ White, who's our draft editor, floats you a question, all three of you answer. So it's sort of
We each give our perspective on the way that it's going to shake out on April 23rd. But this week, one of the questions that we have is, when is the first running back going to be taken? Because we've seen kind of the devaluation of the position over the last several years. We, you know, obviously had Zeke and Leonard Fournette and some other guys taken early in the first round. But you're kind of seeing more of this pass-happy offense of NFL. So teams are not valuing running backs in the first round as often. So if we even get one, it's probably going to come at the end of the first round. So in the case of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I don't think he's going to go in the first round. But once you start getting into that second round, I would feel comfortable with him. I'd feel comfortable with Cam Akers. I'd feel comfortable with Jonathan Taylor or J.K. Dobbins. I mean, that's, again, kind of this jumbled running back position that you start talking about in the second round, which is, I think, where we're going to start seeing a big run at the position.
Well, and you know what happens with these things is, like, there's this, like, in 2013, there was no running back taken in the first round for, like, the first time in, like, 10 or 15 years or whatever, or maybe even longer than that. And then there was a stretch where guys did go in the first round because teams were like, oh, like, you know, they started sort of revaluing these running backs who were available to them in the early part of that draft. Now, I think 2014, maybe there wasn't one taken either. It sort of became more of the norm. But then again, in 2015 was when, I'm trying to think. Yes, Gurley went 10th overall, and Gurley was such an impact guy that it sort of changed the mindset, and people were willing to, then it was like Zeke in 2016. And then 2017, it's like, well, I mean, look at what Zeke did for the Cowboys. Look at Gurley did for the Rams. Like, we got to take Leonard Fournette in the top five. And all of a sudden it flipped things back the other way a little bit, where the overvalue, you know, now it's a little bit overvalued. We saw Barkley in 18, but then 19, Josh Jacobs is the highest guy. It depends on the class too, but I just think you're not going to see a ton, like, I just think teams are hesitant to draft guys in the first round, but the one guy who certainly could creep up in there, of course, would be DeAndre Swift, who is the next Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, we've got a Dalvin Cook comparison on him. He's a really explosive player. I love his lateral quickness, his vision. Believe it or not, he's pretty swifty. He's pretty swifty. Great contact balance, pass game effective. I mean, he's solid in pass protection. This is a guy that does a lot of great things. He's actually pretty polarizing, though. I know a lot of people don't value him until probably the end of round two, but this is a guy that I think has a lot of first-round traits. He just differentiates himself a little bit more than the rest of this class, in my opinion.
Mm. He's, to me, I like the Dalvin Cook comparison. Like, I think he's a patient runner who sort of, like, glides to the edge and then – will cut and get around the corner quickly on you and you don't really realize it, and all of a sudden he's taken off for daylight. Like, that's the comparison that I sort of have with him.
Exactly. I mean, you're talking about that zone blocking scheme where he's able to kind of stretch plays out, see how the blocks are setting up for him, make that one cut, and he'll be gone. I mean, he's got that kind of speed. So he's a really special player with his vision, his burst, just a guy that you can feel comfortable being on the field every single play. So this is where we get in the conversation of, when is it okay to take a running back? So I had him going number 32 overall to the Chiefs.
Sure.
The Chiefs are a classic scenario where they're coming off a Super Bowl victory. You get a guy like DeAndre Swift, put him back there next to Patrick Mahomes. I mean, you've got a Super Bowl roster. You can afford to make a luxury pick in the form of a DeAndre Swift. I mean, when you think about the Chiefs in the running back history, you think of the Priest Holmes, Jamal Charles, Kareem Hunt for a very limited experience. But they're accustomed to having those special running backs, and I think DeAndre Swift could be next in line in that regard. But we're talking about Baltimore there at the end of round one. We're talking about the Dolphins in early round two. Those are kind of three teams that I look at is possibly the team that could take DeAndre Swift off the board as the first running back overall.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, just thinking back at sort of Andy Reid's, the one, and I don't disagree. I've had the Chiefs as a team, and I've been, you know, mocking them to him as well. But like, you do look at his history since he got to Kansas City: Niall Davis in the third round, DeAnthony Thomas in the fourth round, and the other one was Kareem Hunt in the third round. Now, and also Darwin Thompson in the sixth. So I think, I mean, like that, and I'm not criticize, like, I think that's where he would go. I just wonder a little bit if we think that, and you know, Andy Reid took LeSean McCoy 53rd overall, and he was a guy that they featured for a long, long time. You know, he, I'm trying to think, when did he draft Brian Westbrook, or was Westbrook, where's Debo when I need him? Yes, he did draft him in the third round. So that would be my only beef in 2002. That would be like my only qualm with the, God, man, Andy Reid was there forever, wasn't he? Good Lord.
Yeah, he was. My first gut feeling was there was no way that Andy Reid was there when they took Brian Westbrook.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Maybe they did. So I kept my mouth shut, and good thing that I did. But you're right. I mean, I'm not taking it personally.
No, I'm just saying that, like, if you look at Andy Reid's history of it, what he has done a really smart job of targeting guys in that 50 to 100 range who, I mean, Westbrook, Kareem Hunt, you know, and LeSean McCoy, guys who have made a major impact. So I just wonder, would he spend a first round pick on a running back? And we don't know the answer. Maybe he would, if he thinks Swift is that good.
Yeah. I'm with you every step of the way. That was probably, a little bit of a stretch. You kind of go through these different scenarios every single week. I think,
also, really? I will say this, Josh, too, and as someone who does this every week or every 2 weeks in his mock draft, you get to 32 and you're like, oh my gosh, what are the Chiefs? Like, you're just, A, you're ready to be done with the mock draft. B, you're like, what do the Chiefs need? And you're like, DeAndre Swift would be awesome on the Chiefs. So you know what? I'm giving him DeAndre Swift. I don't care what anybody says. And that, you know, maybe Andy Reid sees it. I don't know. Maybe he sees some value in taking a guy at 32 now.
I think it's just a good practice in general to wait until the second or the third round, maybe even the fourth round, to get your running back. But the way that we're talking about the position now, you don't want to take one of those elite, you know, supreme wide or running back talents until you have the rest of your roster filled out.
Sure.
So Kansas City is a team that, you know, they've got Patrick Mahomes. They're feeling comfortable with their offense at this point in time. Andy Reid hadn't won a Super Bowl either. So, you know, this could be a year of first for Andy Reid. Maybe he splurges a little bit and takes a running back in the first round.
Hey, that's a great point. And look, you know, Darwin Thompson, we all love, I took him in like the seventh round of a fantasy draft last year. That was an obvious idiot move. Damian Williams proved himself to be much better than I think that people thought. But I mean, like, he's in the final year of his contract. And Darwin Thompson didn't really show anything as a sixth round pick. Like, you can like his talent all you want, but if he's still a sixth round pick, like, maybe Andy Reid's like, all right, we need to have somebody who we don't have to lean on this year right out of the gate, because we have Damian for one more year. And Damian is 28. So, I mean, like, there is a very viable, argument that they need to invest in the position.
And again, you're talking about a guy that is capable of being on the field in passing situations. He's strong in pass protection. or at least solid. I shouldn't say he's strong. He's solid in pass protection, and he's great as a pass catcher. So even in a pass-happy Chiefs offense, you can feel comfortable with him being out there at any given point in time. But you start thinking about the skill players on this Chiefs roster, Patrick Mahomes, Sammy Watkins, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. You throw in DeAndre Swift in there, I mean, teams are going to have to – they're going to have to respect that you can run the football in this sense, which is only going to open things up even more downfield for those other guys as well. So there's limitless possibilities for what they could do.
If you had DeAndre Swift, all of a sudden you were stretching vertically, you were stretching horizontally, and you were forcing defenses to cover a lot of things. Okay, Josh Edwards, awesome stuff. On the running backs, man, the draft is coming soon. Are you ready for it to be here?
I am, but then I'm not, because what happens when the draft comes and goes? What do we look forward to then? The Masters in September?
Yeah, that's right. Baseball in Arizona in June, apparently.
Yeah.
Fanless baseball Arizona, like on an Olympic-style compound in the state of Arizona, or the greater Phoenix location. Okay, sure, MLB. Yeah, you're right.
So I assume they're going to have this giant bubble. It's going to be like a globe that they
put. Yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
Good stuff. Good stuff, buddy. We will talk again soon. Thanks, as always, for hopping on.
Sounds good.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.